Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures. We have our guests on the line, but I'll just do a brief intro before I bring him in, and we want to thank him for joining us today. We have Timothy Woodward Jr., the director of a new film titled Gangsterland that's coming to video on demand. We'll get into all the platforms, all that fun stuff. We're here to talk film, talk movies, I guess that's the same thing, discuss his process and a few other things. So this is, why do I think it's Friday? It feels like Friday. That's not a bad thing. I love doing this show every day. So with that, I will welcome our guest. Are you with us? Hello? Timothy?
Hi, Paul. It's April. Let me get Timothy on the line.
Oh, okay. So, yes, we're going to be joined by the director soon. Actually, this show is about learning, so sometimes the PR rep patches the guests through. That's nothing private or personal or something that people can't know. And so, yeah, Gangsterland is going to be out December 1st, which is coming up this week. And like I said, also on digital HD, which I have not seen anything on digital HD. Yes, I do go the cheap route and get standard definition, but sometimes you do got to think budget. One sec.
Timothy, you are on with Paul.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Hello. I'm good. How are you today?
I'm doing phenomenal, man. Thanks for asking.
Excellent, excellent. Hey, phenomenal is a good place to be.
For sure.
Congratulations on the release this week. I was looking at your Internet Movie Database page, and what number of release would this be for you as a director?
As a director or producer?
Director.
Director, I think it's number 10, I think.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say, I noticed...
10. Pretty sure it's number 10.
I noticed a lot of the titles and icons from Netflix and various streaming services. I have two ways, just so you know, as a guest, and I know new audience comes with any film we do. Sometimes I come off like a host that didn't do his research, but what it is sometimes I don't want to know too much about a guest, because then it might not create a bias, but maybe they were a part of a film I didn't like, and also for me too, I want to have the fun of learning on this show as well. So it's not just to read EPK kits and then regurgitate what I read. So I always go over everything.
No, I completely understand. Yeah.
So you know, as a filmmaker, we are uncensored. And we are also, we started this show with the concept that we do not like A, B, C, D, E, F, G interviews. So know that if we jump around from departments or questions, it's not that I had too many vodkas this morning. Because I've had that before. I've had guests be like, well, why did you go from film school to editing, and were you prepared? And it's like, well, yeah, everyone can do ABC. So with that,
we're good, man. No worries, I'm good.
Phenomenal cast is what, of course, for audience, everyone debates. It's got to be the script, it's got to be the cinematographer, it's got to be the director, it's got to be there's so many different facets. But what I love about this is, as a director, obviously now you got experience, and I won't say your age, but 10 releases for your age. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
What is it? Oh, you're very welcome. I'm always interested in how directors separate any form of love or fandom they have from getting to direct somebody, like, say, I'm just looking at your first couple of casts. Let's say if you were the biggest Sopranos fan on the planet, or Jason Patrick, I absolutely love. Like, I am not into celebrities. People are people. But what's that like as a director? You sit down and you're like, oh my God, I just love this guy in like five films, and I'm supposed to just put that aside every day. What is that like for a director?
I think the first day when you meet them, you know, there's a little bit of that. But I think also they're looking at you as a director, and they're looking at you as a partner and saying, hey, look, can we make this film together? And how can we do the best job we can working together? And if they see you kind of, you know, starstruck and just not concentrated and stuff, I think that kind of just shows that maybe you could be a little bit weaker when it comes to working and the trust there. So I think you kind of have to put that, you're forced to push that to the side and look at them as a collaborating and partner and say, okay, well, it doesn't matter that I'm just a kid from South Carolina, or I'm just this guy, you know, in California trying to make it half the time. You know, when I started, didn't know what I'm doing. Here I am now, and I'm working with this guy, and I have to do the best I can with my circumstances, and we have to form a bond and a trust. And I think that's the most important thing. And once you realize that, and how many other moving parts and elements, you know, people that are relying on you to make the correct decisions or the best decision you can, you know, I think that allows you to kind of push those things out of the way.
Okay, because I like what you just said, because we had a guest one time who was a production designer, and he had done A Beautiful Mind and eight of Spike Lee's films, and he was a very well-known production designer. And I kept not wanting to make a name dropper because I hadn't kind of debunked my fandom, because he had done like Malcolm X, and there was finally a point where he told me after the show, he was like, if I'm on your show, you can mention my films. Like,
So, the way you
just put it, I really like, because he wasn't upset, but he just found it kind of like, almost kind of just like, you know, a compliment of like, you know, you can say Malcolm X while I'm sitting here. So thank you for explaining that, because I always wonder. And, of course, I'll read the, well, actually, you know what? I love to hear the director say what the film's about, as opposed to the log line.
Yeah. I mean, it's really about Jack McGurn and Al Capone, and just these guys that were coming up through the 1920s and through Prohibition, and, you know, how they became these notorious gangsters and their story. It's also about the Italian and Bugs Moran. It's a very ensemble kind of movie, that's just really about this time period and the circumstances that surrounded these people. The original title was In the Absence of Good Men, because really there's not one good person, you know, as far as in the movie itself that's actually pure. Everybody's very flawed. Everybody thinks they're a hero, and you know, no one is.
Right. And we won't get into it, but today that title probably wouldn't fly too well. So what brings that up, being ensemble, what is one of the most daunting tasks? It could apply to anybody who's doing a historical movie, where you're doing a character and a piece where people know the story or have their interpretation of it, or it's Al Capone. So what is that like as a filmmaker going in?
I think it's tough, because one of the things is, like you said, everybody has their own interpretation. And I think that's the most important thing that I had to realize myself immediately, is that everyone has their interpretation, because the reality is there is no voice recording of Al Capone. It's only described how he talked. You know, we don't even have a voice recording. There isn't, you know, that much video on Al Capone. There's only stories, and there is so many stories that it's almost like the Wild West, where certain things are myth and then there's certain things that are fact. And so we tried to incorporate as much as we could, but also just my interpretation of how I thought an Al Capone could be, from not just the psychotic side that we've maybe saw on certain TV shows and movies, but more of like, hey, what's a man who really is capable of doing evil things because he thinks he's doing good things? So for him, you know, hey, look, I'm just a bootlegger. You know, I'm providing a service. I'm trying to get ahead. Why can't I get ahead? And if along the way somebody does me wrong or I think it's better for the overall good, I'm going to convince myself that, you know, what I'm doing is right. And so in his own story, in his own way, he thinks he's a good guy. And so for me, it was really important to kind of do a different take on that and kind of show that side of him and show that he could be a guy you're talking to 1 minute, and the next minute he could be bashing somebody's head in.
Right. Did you stay away from, I never compare any directors, but obviously from age and experience, like, did you stay away from films like Saving the Untouchables, like De Palma's Take or De Niro, or what? I mean, was that a no-no, or did you want to kind of see something?
Anything is a no-no, because that's what you just named two incredible, you know, you named an incredible actor and an incredible filmmaker who I have nothing but respect for. So obviously,
right.
You know, when you see these movies that are classic, that are incredible, I mean, some of that's going to rub off no matter what. We did try to do a different version of De Niro simply because Al Capone, just simply because our guy starts off very young. You know, their movie takes place after the St. Valentine's Day Massacre in 1929. Our film, you know, takes place, you know, really the majority, 90% of it is well before that, and even 10 years before that. So, you know, we're trying, you know, we tried to, just take it. Let's see what brought someone from being a guy who just wanted to get ahead to getting towards that place where anger was up front, where he had paranoia and everything. And I mean, you know, he had syphilis. So, you know, there was things that, you know, that were also contributing to his mind at the time where he was in the 1929s and 1930s and stuff that started making him even be more paranoia, have more paranoia.
Right. Okay. I see. Yeah. Cause that's, you know, for film lovers, and we're hitting that point. I'm only about 5 years older than you, but I think we're hitting that point where we kind of forget that a film is 30 years old or 25 years old, and you talk with somebody who's maybe a couple years younger than you, and they say, huh? Or, so I'm always shocked. There's probably so many people out there that have not seen The Untouchables, or I always trip when someone says they haven't seen The Shawshank Redemption. And then I go, well, I guess it is a 26-year-old movie. But I know with filmmakers that are on here, we watch everything and we love everything and we do what we can. What the first thing I thought before we booked this screener, and all I had read was the log line. And I'm only going to bring up this film because I want to make sure that viewers never waste their time watching it. It's titled Mobsters, and they tried to take the hot 80 actors of the day, Patrick Dempsey and Richard Grieco and Christian Slater, and make them be these mean, tough mobsters. I think they were trying to do what they did with Young Guns by using all the hot 80s actors to pull off a Western. So the reason why I mentioned this was because I was intrigued by the cast, and someone willing to dive into not the subject or how are you going to do it, but all the elements like costume and how most gangster movies are black and white. Most are film. So could you address what it was like to face some of those elements that were linked to a genre that people are automatically going to not judge, but kind of be like,
yeah,
the costumes better be on and et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we wanted to do immediately was, you know, I'm a huge fan of film noir. And when I read this script and started thinking about it, we said, what would a black and white movie look like if it was in color? Now, that's weird to say, but it's basically saying, how could your eyes interpret this movie where there's not too much color as far as saturation, but it still has a film noir vibe to it, playing off of mirrors. you know, using smoke, doing a lot of the same tricks, using longer takes, wider shots, et cetera, playing up tension. And so, you know, we went into this, you know, trying to kind of do those things, but also modernizing it at the same time so, you know, an audience can relate to it. And it didn't feel like the same thing because, you know, some of these movies are just masterpieces. So it's like you have to, you know, you want to kind of pay your respects to that, but at the same time, we wanted to do something that was different, something that was challenging. So, you know, you'll see a lot of, you know, these kinds of film noir in there and just a lot of things. But then when it's an action scene, we may have a steady cam shot moving and, you know, added some movement in there to kind of just, again, modernize it a little bit with more modern filmmaking. And as far as the costumes go, you know, that was, you know, that's always going to be a challenge. And I'm sure there's plenty of people that are going to look at our film and say, hey, look, you didn't do this right or you didn't do that right. And we welcome that. But what I can say is we did the best we could with what we had to work with. And we really, you know, everyone on the team worked really, really hard to make a movie that, you know, we hope is enjoyable to everyone and entertaining.
Well, I love that answer because at the end of the day, I mean, to me, that's just what filmmaking should be. I mean, I get that we all have bills and we all have et cetera, but as we both know, the great films that are made are made with that purpose and that reason. And so I really, really like that answer. Now, here's something just kind of off to the side, because one of the few modern gangster movies that I remember, and now it's probably 10 years ago because I just forget time, was Michael Mann's Public Enemies, which this film made me think of because it was pulling off. I wasn't feeling like, oh, this isn't black and white, or oh, there's too much color, or there's this lighting trick that's just overkill. Did you have one sec, I need to rephrase this. Every time I ask a guest their influences, I know that's, as a filmmaker, that's like asking to tell your life story for the next 2 hours. Could you narrow it down to maybe two or three directors that heavily influence you and keep you keep you going at what you do? Like, you consistently have this director to go back to when you're doing something.
God, there's so many is the thing. You know what I mean? And it.
I know that's the problem. I know there's probably 30,
look, David Fincher, anything he touches, I feel like I really, you know, I mean, there's one, I'm not going to name it, but that I'm not super, super with. But, you know, I mean, he's somebody who's very interesting to me just because his use of camera and just the way he does things, it's just amazing to watch, and how he can take the simplest shot and just hang on things. And I kind of envy that because I wish I was allowed to hang on more moments and do things and not be as restricted by the fact that, you know, knowing my budget limitations and knowing that the movie needs to come in at a certain runtime, et cetera, you know. So I really admire his work and look to some of his Seven, you know, it was just an incredible film. Fight Club is an incredible film. I even liked Zodiac. I thought it was long, but I still thought it was great moments. But, you know, so I love, you know, anything that he does, basically. Christopher Nolan, incredible. I mean, and then there's even guys like Steven Spielberg is, you know, phenomenal. I mean, there's just, like I said, there's so many that it's hard to just name off any that were particular in the gangster genre. I mean, you already mentioned Brian Del Palma. I mean, amazing. Like, what he did was phenomenal. And even some of the other, Scarface, I mean, you know, it's a great movie.
Oh, yeah, Scarface. Well, I like that when you said David Fincher, and that immediately some stuff popped in my brain from your film, because I really like being able to watch a film. And usually why I ask that question is because I like to watch a film as a filmmaker myself and think, you know what, they like this director, and this director, and then ask and see. It's kind of like a little match game I play with myself. And so I could, I liked that, especially with some of the lighting and the, you had mentioned Seven and Fight Club. Again, we're at a point where I get people that say, what's Seven? Do yourself a favor, take a day off work if you have to watch Seven. So do you have a, I mean, I know there's hundreds. I know from, I've produced films from that first note to obviously when we're standing at the premiere or the film festival or it's on Amazon Prime. Do you have a least favorite part of the process where you're just like,
to generalize it, I'd say, you know, prep, I'm anxious in prep, but I like doing the research. So it's kind of like a, I'm so anxious to get into the film that prep sometimes it feels like, you know, let's do it already. But I do appreciate the research and the days. And I love because you just get to find things. What I hate about both is sometimes, you know, when you're on such a deadline and you're, you know, you're really looking at something over and over, you can make mistakes because you can overthink it. But you can also make mistakes by underthinking it. So, you know, again, that I guess there's different parts of it that I don't like as much. But, you know, I like the entire filmmaking process. I mean, for me, if I could be on a set every day and I wouldn't get criticized for making too many movies, I would do it. Because I love being on a film set. I just absolutely enjoy it. I love creating. I love trying. Even when we're failing trying, I still love doing it because I'm learning something. So I would be there every single day if I could. But, you know, it's, I mean, like I said, I like the overall, the process. I mean, casting is always tough when you've got a distributor and you're going back and forth, and sometimes they don't share the same feelings maybe as you, or sometimes they're giving you a little bit of a pullback. But, you know, I've been pretty lucky that I've got a supportive team for the last several movies that have really supported me in my decisions, and that's kind of given me a lot of freedom, a lot more than I would normally have to be able to cast. And they don't just say, hey, we just want this name or this name. They've really kind of said, okay, who's the best for your project, and let's try to figure it out. So I've been, you know, been very kind of blessed with that. So I can't really even complain about that at this point. Love
well,
to have more money.
Congratulations on that. Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I guess I always say the only producer on the the two producers on the planet that never have a budget problem is Brian Grazer and Jerry Bruckheimer. And
yeah,
we don't
exactly.
knock them
but
because...
But you know what, though? Sometimes, I mean, I'll be honest with you, though. Sometimes you get your most creative sometimes from constraints. I mean, there's a scene in this film where there's a one-minute-long Steadicam take just through this club and this party, and it was going to be shot completely different. But because Cation we were originally going to get fell through, I had to reconstruct everything the morning of in my mind and figure out exactly how I was going to shoot it. And, you know, this came from that. But if we would have had a budget to fly in a different crane and a few different things, you know, I would have probably done it the original way, which wouldn't have been anywhere near as interesting as what I think we came up with. So, you know, and there's several scenes that are in this film that are like that, where our backs were against the wall. And, you know, that's kind of where the most something clicks and, you know, you try. And sometimes, again, you fail miserably at what you're trying to do. But at least it's like a chance and it's an honest, hey, I'm putting everything I've got into it, and you're like, no matter what, you know, you still won because you gained knowledge off of it and you tried something that was daring and different.
Oh, yes, I definitely agree with the budget thing, the and the how it can. The first feature I produced on Amazon was for $2,000. The second was for $150,000, and the second one just, I mean, they both stink, but the first one you can see that it was like you're saying, at least you tried, at least you were doing something, you know, the passion was there. There was way more, like you're saying, there's more put into the film than with the second one where it's like, you know, you're getting paid, you know, you're getting, you can be a little bit more lax. You don't have to bring your, you know, the people who dare to not bring their 100% when they're working on a project, there's nothing that irks me more than someone who comes on a project and gives like, I don't even like 98% if you're going to do something.
No, it's got to be 100, man. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
110 sometimes. And, you know, and that's I think you can see that in films. And that's one thing we've strived for. I mean, like, I'm there to move a light. I'm there to do anything. I'm not a guy who's just going to sit behind the monitor. I'm running back and forth. I'm talking to the actors. I'm talking to my DP. I'm letting people do their jobs, but I'm letting them know that, like, you're not going to outwork me no matter what. Like, we're going to work together, and, like, this is going to be this way. And, you know, if everybody else wants to go home, if me and my DP need to stay and get the shot, we will, you know, because we're, you know, that way. But, you know, luckily we had a team, and everybody really, really loved this film. And there was a lot of – there was times where the actors rapped, and they stayed and hung out. I mean, almost every day, actually, just because they liked it that much. And they were all commenting on, you know, the fact that there's just a lot of passion into it, because it's a very ambitious project, you know, with our budgets.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's right. That was the other thing I wanted to say that I liked when I read the log line was I thought that was one of the things that came to my mind, too, was the ambition. That was what I was alluding to with costumes and lighting and historical. I think I'm personally someone who admires, like you were saying, people take it the wrong way, not admiring failure, but it's like I would rather see someone just trying the most ambitious thing, and just the fact that they even tried overdoing the simplest film and it being, you know, moderately good to, you know, good, because it's like, there's that, you know, it's like, you know, that buzz. And I wish that everyone could experience that buzz. I now get that buzz of what you said, being on set every day. I wish that it was not pointless to do 7 podcasts a week or to do a 5-hour podcast, because doing this show is like my buzz. Like I feel drunk right now, you know, like. So I really
it's
about the passion
thing to do. And it's and you know, the thing is with film, what really, really kind of is, it's not bad, but it is what it is that, you know, if you do too many things, then you're looked at as oversaturated or whatever, you know,
right.
You're not going to ever be able to get to this point, you know, if you're doing it. And it kind of, you know, it kind of stinks a little bit, because again, it's something to where, you know, if you could do it every day, it's so much more than a job. It's really a passion, and it's such a, you know, it's creating something. And if, you know, again, if you're not doing it right, you're learning how to do it right. And if you are failing, at least you're failing big and you're stepping up and you're doing it again. But you're getting to do what you love to do, which is making movies, opposed to, you know, forcing yourself to, okay, let me take this time and not do anything for a minute, you know, and just develop the next thing or whatever. Because, you know, if you do too many, you get looked at bad, you know?
Right, yeah. And development is always fun and interesting. And I like when those little things come wrong. I mean, I've never actually said this on air, but the only reason this show exists was because I had a falling out with the editor I was working with at a magazine for a few years. And I literally just thought, what am I going to do? I've already PA'd all the shows I want. I have multiple national releases as a producer. I have a health issue that permits me from working 18-hour days. So I was just like, well, this is, what else is there in the film biz? And it came from that kind of not failure, and I can't really say what went on with the magazine, but it came from just being in that place of feeling like a failure. And then a friend of mine was just like, well, you never shut up, and you study film every day, and you've worked in the biz, start a podcast. I thought we'd have 10 shows, which would be my 10 friends that would come on, and you're episode 257. So I am grateful for being at that point of feeling like a failure. Oh yeah, no, thank you. And you're actually, your film number 37 that's come on for release, a director, DP, or producer. So we thank you for that. Now we just get into the last couple of basic questions that we ask each guest. They are very simple. First one is, script is there, budget's there, cast is there, everything's there. You get to pick a dream genre. What do you want to do?
God, you had to hit me with that. I think I've already done the list. I've done genre. Right now, I'm really dying to do a World War II film, so that would probably be the short answer. The long answer over the career would be a throwback murder mystery, Agatha Christie style film noir type movie. You know, long term. Short term is like I'm really dying to do a World War II movie right now.
So then you got your Mudbound to watch, and you got Murder on the Orient Express. So at least right now you get to
already watched both.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say Mudbound. I loved Murder on the Orient Express. Pacing was a little off for me. I don't know why it was as long as it was, but I thought Mudbound was genius. Actually, like 2 weeks ago, we had the cinematographer of Mudbound on the show. So
yeah,
shameless plug if you want to go in the archives and hear her talk.
I'll check it out for sure.
The other one is just the opposite question. Script's there. Like you said, you like being on set, you could deal with everything, but you haven't eaten in a week. They're going to repossess your car, but there's no way you're going to put your name on this genre or have anything to do with it.
You know, the problem with that is that I love movies so much that there's nothing that really I absolutely hate. I got to be real with you. And I'm just, you know, I want to try everything. So, you know, I don't even know what that would be, to be real with you, you know, just because – I mean, there's several things that I don't want to do no matter what, but I think at some point I may want to do them because that's just, you know, I want to try it. Like I said, I want to try everything.
Interesting. I like that, you know, because as I've been doing this question, it first started off where everybody would say sci-fi and they'd say they wouldn't do porn. Then it became they would try anything and they wouldn't do that version of horror that's called torture porn. So
yeah.
I like the idea of the openness. I think, like you were saying, with filmmakers, it is tough because you have those, you might not like the genre, but you saw a great version of that genre. I've come across a few films lately just in researching for the show where it's like yesterday I watched this movie. It was so bad. It was called, and it was actually, no pun intended, it was called Garbage. And there's all these guys who find Cuba Gooding Jr.'s Oscar in the trash. And the movie was so bad, but in that kind of way of like, it was a little bit entertaining. And then I was telling one of the producers of the show, I said, this movie is so bad. They go, what's it called? I said, Garbage. They said, that didn't answer your question. They go, why would you click on a movie called Garbage thinking you were getting Citizen Kane? But if anybody knows those filmmakers or whatever, not knocking them, it was just a funny little thing of watching too many films. Again, so the last thing we have here is please tell us all the VOD outlets again this Friday that people you can check out Gangsterland. So right now the director is going to tell us the video on demand outlets, and please hit us with all your social media.
Great. So yeah, it's coming out in theaters as well. So it's out in theatrically in several markets, Los Angeles, and a bunch of the other major cities. It's online.
Pardon my faux pas on that. Go ahead.
No, and then on VOD as well, it's coming out on Vudu, it's coming out on Amazon, it's coming out on iTunes, it's coming out on Comcast, what used to be Time Warner, I think it's called Spectrum now, Verizon, just about any cable outlet, Dish and DirecTV, So you can catch it on any of those, anywhere where it's in the In Theaters Now section. It's going to be available there. So, yeah, it'll be, like I said, everywhere.
And your social media?
Social media, yeah. I have an official. I have an official Facebook page, which is Timothy Woodward Jr. If you search it, you can find me. I have a personal page as well, and I have a Twitter account, Timothy Woodward Jr. Gangsterland also has a Facebook page, which is the Gangsterland Movie. You can find that on there just by searching Gangsterland Movie. And we're posting updates of the theaters, and we're actually having the world premiere tonight at the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood, which is where they threw the first ever red carpet premiere in all of Hollywood, which was Robin Hood in the 1920s, so there's a cool little throwback there. And it's going to be a good time. We'll be posting pictures.
Oh, the Egyptian is awesome.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So I don't know if you're in L.A., but if you're in L.A., you're definitely invited.
Oh, you know, I truly, truly appreciate that. I'm actually in South Carolina right now, but thank you. That is very, very kind of you. I would, of course, go because I shamelessly take any premiere invite. I'm only in this for the perks. I'm not doing it to support filmmakers. No, just kidding. But that's awesome. You get to show in the Egyptian. I love that theater. Turner Classic Movies Film Festival has their theater there. That is just a great place. That is really cool. And that, congrats on that and your passion and true love of film paying off in that way. So the last thing we're going to say is, every guest that comes on, is invited back for future projects, unless you hang up and say, why did I just do that show? Let us know, feel free to, we work with the PR team on multiple projects that you and I have met through for the show. So yes. Please put us in your book or whatever. We're always happy. We're here to support filmmakers and get word out. And we love when a filmmaker comes back. So just know that that's out there in the universe.
Great, man. I'd love to come back on as well. So thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you. I look forward to listening back to this and just and also your other shows as well.
Thank you so much. You have a great day and enjoy the heck out of tonight.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Have a good one yourself.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
All right. That was fantastic. We love doing business. Thank you, April, and with this company that we work with that always sends us great films. So we thank them as well. And everyone who's there that we have other stuff going on with, we will be bringing more shows from this company and the great stuff they send us. So I'm going to wrap it up here, saying my usual, which is have a great day, spread some peace, aloha to everyone. And whether it's morning, afternoon, or night, or whatever other time of day you can find, make sure and watch a good movie.